Lockdowns continue for millions of Sydneysiders, while tough restrictions remain on millions of Australians in other cities, all part of the effort to stem the spread of the COVID-19 Delta strain. But do restrictions also slow down the so-called longevity machine? That's that web of economic, family, and social activities that have seen our lifespans increase, especially over the past 20 years. In a controversial new analysis, Dr. Cameron Murray of the Henry Halloran Trust at the University of Sydney argues that some harsh COVID responses can end up shortening lives, but we may not know for several years. Cameron Murray joined me via Skype.
The longevity machine is what I'm calling the sum of economic and social interactions, the sum of our day-to-day lives across Australia. And why do I call it a longevity machine? You can sort of think about society in an economic lens, for example, and you can say, well, the machinery of what we do every day produces economic outputs. But that same machinery, those same social processes also are what produces longevity.
So the machine is economic activity that then funds what? Taxation to support healthcare, taxation to support pensions, in concrete terms.
In concrete terms, yeah. Well, we know what makes people live a long time. Well, clean water, warm homes, good education, stable family lives, healthcare services, social interactions we know are related to how much people live. And the reason to lump all of those things together is because it's actually very difficult to work out the effect of any one part of this in one go. So if we're talking, for example, with lockdowns in our COVID response, and we're going to disrupt the whole of our social interaction, it's worth considering what the output is to the whole system, even if some parts maybe produce a reduction in life expectancy, whereas other parts produce more.
This is fascinating. Controversial too, Cameron, although you're accustomed to controversy. You say that Australians now have an average lifespan of 83 years. Why do you argue that at least some of the COVID response could actually threaten that lifespan?
I guess the way I think about it and the way most sort of health analysts think about it is you don't save lives, you delay death. And doing more of the activities that delay death get you longer lifespans. And so, for example, in the last decade in Australia, our life expectancy grew a year and a half. And in some cases, it grows much, much quicker, a year and a half in 3 or 4 years in Nigeria or India, where they're developing very quickly. So small disruptions to this process across a wide number of people are going to slow down our ability to delay death by having good education, stable families, preventative health care, exercise and activity, and all those sorts of things that go into day-to-day life. That's what's at risk, delaying that machine, and that comes with large life expectancy costs.
Let me quote, though, a fellow academic at Sydney University, a COVID-19 modeller. He said that restrictions, and I'm assuming he's talking here not just about lockdowns, but border closures and social distancing, etc. He said they've saved 50,000 lives. Now, that's not a figure that we can dismiss lightly, is it?
I think we should dismiss it. Why do I say that? You can find a model to tell you just about anything with COVID. If we look, for example, to Europe, to Sweden, which is apparently the basket case for not locking down, their excess deaths last year were about 300 per million. So that's about 7,500 for Australia's population. So that's the order of magnitude we should be considering. Now, the question is, can lockdowns actually make that 7,500 zero? Do they actually work? Or do they just delay 12 months, for example, the inevitable? That's still up for grabs for sure. But just to give you some indication, every day that the economy operates in Australia, we add 9,600 additional life years just through this process, this longevity machine of doing our day-to-day things. Every single day that operates adds another 9,500 life years across the board on average by increasing our life expectancy. So although that's a big number, the fact that the machine is so much bigger than the small number of people at risk of COVID means a tiny disruption has a big cost.
I know that you don't like, and many ethicists also don't like, this binary that it is lives or the economy. But we do prioritize lives and safety over money. And that's why we do have, for example, occupational health and safety laws and laws against child labor, laws against slavery, as people would have heard earlier on this program. Why is the COVID response different, though?
We actually don't do that. What we do is we have, for example, when government spends money on subsidizing medicine, for example, they will actually calculate the expected life years or quality adjusted life years gained from having that subsidized compared to the budgetary costs. And if it exceeds the threshold of something like $25,000 per life year, then it won't be subsidized. So we actually do make that trade-off every single day. Where I think it's different here is that I'm not actually arguing for trading off the economy for health. I'm actually arguing that the economy produces health, not just the formal economy, but the informal economy, all those support services, all those things. For example, we know that lockdowns and border closures have delayed the routine rolled out of global childhood vaccination programs, for example, all across Asia and Africa, for example. And there are estimates already that that's cost over 1 million lives of children aged under 5 from all those other health issues. Because, of course, health is not COVID. Health is every issue. COVID's a tiny, tiny fraction. And so we're putting a broad range of other health outcomes at risk from locking downs. And that's just one example. And that by itself would have exceeded the human costs, the health costs of COVID globally, just that delay in childhood vaccinations.
There's some other fascinating and quite intangible, but you still argue very valuable things that some of our COVID response has put at risk. People meeting their potential future spouses, which we often do, which we nearly always do in communal settings, relationships and mental health with our families. I mean, how is some of this playing into your argument?
I've been surprised to see that suicides, for example, haven't gone up. But in fact, in the US, well, we know that teenage suicide attempts are up by 50% in girls. So that's age 12 to 17, arrivals at hospital emergencies after attempted suicide. So, I mean, that's pretty indicative of this sort of decline in mental health. We know binge drinking is up. We know deaths from lots of other causes that are related to self-harm are up all around the world. And we also know that health is social in many ways. It's contagious. You live with healthy people, you adopt healthy habits, you socialize more, people with more friends live longer. All those sorts of things have this intangible but collective effect on well-being and therefore overall health. All those delayed weddings, funerals, formals, birthdays, celebrations, all those life milestones, they can't get them back. Those sort of things all feed into the mix. And I'm not saying any one thing is hugely costly for health, but we know that the sum of our social lives is important for health.
Just as we wind up, Cameron, you co-authored a couple of years ago a fascinating book called Game of Mates, which was about crony capitalism and the way that capitalism that relies on favors and favorable decisions from governments had led to extraordinary wealth inequality. In many ways, you are an economist of the left. Has the COVID response factored into this idea of the game of mates hypothesis?
Yeah, it has to some degree. I actually wrote a little bit about my predictions last year of where I thought things would go based on the mass panic we've seen. And I predicted that politicians would use this situation to cover up many upwards redistributions of wealth through many, many subtle and indirect policies. For example, we know that locking down and closing local retailers has been a huge boost to online retailers. We know that Facebook, Amazon, Google, all those tech companies had record profits last year, unexpected profits that were hundreds of billions of dollars. Like, the amount of money that has been upwardly redistributed is enormous. And we know, for example, that our stimulus response was heavily weighted to the top of society with the business cash flow boost, the JobKeeper. A lot of that went to the bottom lines of big business. Yeah, I think the left, unfortunately, has really been a bit distracted here and missed what's really going on, the political movements to capitalize on this state of panic and the enormous upwards redistributions of wealth that you could never get away with in normal times, that we could easily get away with under the cover of this COVID panic.
Dr. Cameron Murray of the Henry Halloran Trust at the University of Sydney.